from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. A bill to make police body cam videos more available to the public is making its way through the state legislature. KQED's politics editor Scott Schaefer reports the bill faces an uncertain future.
Body or dash camera video can provide crucial information about controversial incidents like police shootings. But law enforcement agencies often refuse to release the video, saying that could endanger the outcome of an ongoing investigation. San Francisco Assemblyman Phil Ting is sponsoring legislation to create statewide guidelines on giving the public more access to the videos. Ting says while many big city police departments already have body cam policies, his bill will especially give guidance to law enforcement organizations in towns and rural areas.
A lot of smaller agencies don't have the time or the staffing to really go do this, so I think it is good to have a consistent statewide policy that everyone follows.
Ting's body cam legislation has already passed the full assembly. Next, it has to get through the Senate Appropriations Committee, where bills often die with little explanation. Ting is hopeful his bill will make it through. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
We're going to stay on the topic of criminal justice now. For more than two decades, California prisons have kept certain inmates, like informants, former gang members, and people convicted of child molesting, separate from the general population in prisons. This was done for their own safety. Now the Department of Corrections is phasing out what it says is a failed policy. KQED's Suki Lewis reports.
I'm recording.
Okay.
David's a 29-year-old inmate at Corcoran State Prison. He didn't want me to use his last name because he's worried about his safety. This is David's second time in prison for gang-related felonies. But David says he left his gang over a year ago. He hopes with good behavior to go home in about 6 months. But he's worried this new policy might put him in danger.
They're going to see me as not only a dropout gang member, but as, you know, one of these sex offenders or snitches or whatever you want to call them. Even though I'm not.
I ask Vicki Waters, spokeswoman for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, about David's concern that he might not survive this reintegration.
If he has any concerns, he should definitely bring it up to his correctional counselor and to the custody staff.
Waters says phasing out sensitive needs yards is necessary, now that 30% of incarcerated people, that's about 40,000 inmates, are classified that way.
The reality has been that in those, you know, over two decades since we've had sensitive needs yards, the population for sensitive needs has grown to a level that is just non-sustainable for the future of the system.
The CDCR has an incredibly difficult job because of the mess they made with the sensitive needs yards for many, many years.
That's John Spector, executive director of the Prison Law Office. He says his group has been advocating for years for the Department of Corrections to change the way it deals with inmates who have safety concerns. In the lower-level security areas that have been integrated so far, prison officials say there have been flare-ups, but no serious injuries.
All I can say is that being on a sensitive needs yard was no walk in the park either. It's very dangerous.
They say they're going to do this reintegration in stages and have no immediate plans to integrate the higher security inmates. For the California Report, I'm Suki Lewis.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, the website that shows all financial accounts in one place and helps plan for retirement. PersonalCapital.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com.
Firefighters are gaining ground on the enormous wildfire burning north of Napa near Lake Berryessa. Higher humidity along with cooler temperatures yesterday helped firefighters slow the flames of the county fire, according to Cal Fire Division Chief Chris Anthony.
So things are looking really good. Our containment's going up. The firing operations that we put into place are making a huge difference.
The wildfire is now 27% contained. Well, just down the road from Lake Berryessa is the California State Capitol, and for decades, California governors have held important press conferences in a room at the state capitol annex known simply by its number, 1190. This drab, windowless press room could eventually get a facelift with money in the new state budget. And while the room is the interior design equivalent of an old pair of sweatpants, KQED's Katie Orr noticed one stylish thing in there, the chairs that the journals sit in.
The cramped Capitol press room is filled with rows of skinny brown tables and big, bulky chairs in colors like yellow, brown, and tan. Honestly, the chairs have always kind of bugged me. They're heavy and hard to move and really hurt when they smash against your fingers. But they're also a classic mid-century design and in pretty good shape. As the long process of replacing the annex begins, it got me thinking about how much the chairs are worth. So I called in an expert.
Well, it's a shell form chair, and these are stock models.
Sacramento appraiser Brian Witherell is a frequent expert on PBS's Antiques Roadshow. He says the fiberglass chairs were manufactured by Herman Miller and created by renowned designers Charles and Ray Eames.
Even though they were innovators in art and design, the production of the chairs was very much an industry. They come with two different sets of bases. This is the least desirable base.
It's not entirely clear how the chairs came to be in the press room. Vito Scromo has worked in and around the Capitol since 1984, including stints as the building's curator and manager. He says the chairs were likely purchased in the 1960s when the governor was either Pat Brown or Ronald Reagan.
They've seen a lot of history made here, but we can't identify why these particular chairs, this design, was used here. My only assumption was this is so commonly used in the 60s that it was the no-brainer. This is just typical. Let's just order them.
But these days, even basic mid-century furniture can be a big draw. So how much would each of these chairs be worth? Witherell took a look.
We have a tendency to err on the conservative side of estimates, but we'd estimate them at $250 to $500 a piece, and they might very well do $750.
Now, that might not seem like a huge amount, but there are 45 chairs in the room. At $500 each, that's more than $22,000. It's not clear what will happen to the chairs as the annex renovation moves forward. The state could eventually auction them off with its other surplus property. Could be something for furniture dealers to keep an eye on. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
And I'm John Sepulvedo. This has been the California Report for Thursday, July 5th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Have a great day.